Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a very interesting show, as usual, dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science. And, you know, tonight we have a guest on, Dr. Leo Kim, who has written a book, Healing the Rift, which deals with what this show is about. Isn't that wonderful? It's about, of course, his book is about how can you join together, basically, science and spirituality in a way that brings it to a, we'll say, a mutual and a resolved state in which people's minds are able to understand both sides of what each is able to contribute. And I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Kim because I think that he can help us to better understand this whole situation, which I talk about very frequently, to say the least, and I'm sure you will love his ideas and his viewpoints on these things. Dr. Kim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Okay. You're very welcome, by the way. Thank you for being on. And I thought that, now I'm going to just mention to our audience, I usually give out the phone numbers, but from what I hear, they are prominently available on the website. So if you're already listening, obviously, on the web, you can just get the numbers off. I don't have to repeat them that way. And if you would like to call in, you can, to talk to Dr. Kim or myself if you want to say something to me. But, of course, he's our guest for this evening. And I would just like to start off with this this kind of question and thought process, which is in our discussions earlier, you and I had a great conversation, although it was awfully short. I would like it to be more than the time I had to talk with you, unfortunately, because I had other things I had to get to, but we will continue that. We talked about the question of the brain being significantly different from the mind. The brain is an instrument, more or less, that is used for storing information, this is my opinion now, and also for controlling the instrument of the body, but at the same time, the mind is a separate thing. And if you could, let us know what you think, what are your thoughts about what a mind is and what thought is, and how that is significantly different from just the apparatus. So why don't we start with that one thought, and I'll just let you talk. Go
ahead. Okay. Well, you know, we're going into getting rid of false perceptions. You know, when our basic assumption about something is totally wrong, then that points us in the wrong direction and we'll never discover the truth. And later we'll talk about what that perception is, and it's basically that everything in our universe is made up of things. And the things are what constitute atoms and which make up molecules, which create our brains, and our brains create all of our reality. And that's the basic assumption that people have been making for several centuries. And most scientists still do that today, and most individuals. But what is the mind, and how can one dispute the fact? Let me give you a simple analogy. If a little girl looks at television for the first time and sees a cartoon and screams to her mother, "Wonderful, look at that," and she's pointing to a cartoon and she says, "That box created that." And she noticed when her father switches it to Channel 5, there's the news, and that box created that. And we all know that the box doesn't create the news, the movies on the TV, nor the cartoons. All the box does is it picks up energy from the universe. It turns out to be the wavelength is one of trillions and trillions of different wavelengths permeating the universe. It filters out all the rest, and it takes that energy, transforms it into a form that the little girl or we can understand. Well, we have a box sitting on our shoulders that we call the brain, and it picks up information from the universe. And so what I call the universal mind, or where where all the stuff that creates our reality comes from is not our brain. Our brain is simply that box that sits on our shoulders that translates the information or the spirit or the energies from the universe and translate it into something we can understand. Does that make sense to you?
It certainly does. I would say that there's kind of like three sides I see to that, from what you said and some things that I have come up with and talked about. And that is that the mind includes the form side of existence as well as thought itself. And thought is actually two parts of what I would call a mind. And the third part is what you would call energy or things, but it's some kind of energy. And our universe is an active or interactive universe, so therefore energy is one of the main ingredients, because in most dimensions of time and space, I believe energy exists and is necessary. I don't believe it is absolutely necessary in terms of thought, but I do think it's necessary in terms of mind, which is a little bit different. So, and interestingly, I think we're on the same page, because you're saying that for a mind to exist, there still needs to be not just what we would call thought, which I have a definition for myself, but nonetheless, there also has to be some form or some energy that is interactive so that you can communicate, so that you have a way of informing not only yourself, but other thoughts and minds that exist besides yourself. At any rate, so let me ask you this question then.
Mm-hmm.
If mind exists outside of the brain, which I think we both believe that to be true, but it also depends upon the brain as an instrument, just like the television set, as you put it, and I think that was a great analogy, by the way, then if that's true, if there's some part, such as thought itself, that is not a tangible or form-based part of existence. And what would you say about that? So I'm just going to let you give your ideas about that.
Well, I think there is, if we discard the concept that everything in our world is things, and we replace it by premise that we live in a spiritual, mental universe where this immaterial stuff creates everything. It creates us, it creates life, it creates our reality, then that stuff out there is a universal truth, and it holds the truth of the universe. And so by utilizing our mind, by quieting our mind and tuning in to this this wisdom of the universe, we can really benefit from this. Now, the teachings of ancient spirituality, this is how all of the spiritual gurus have accessed the wisdom that today scientists are just coming around to accepting. So this is the point that I really want people to understand, and that how empowered we all are, that we can actually access that wisdom of the universe. And by doing so, you know, we can change literally the wiring of our brains. And the neuroscientists, so this is the hottest thing going in neuroscience right now, and it's called brain plasticity. It, you know, that shows that brain doesn't create mind. Mind can actually rewire the brain. And mind can change our health. It can change every one of our 50 trillion cells at the DNA level. And that's a proven scientific fact. In fact, mental exercises are given to stroke patients. It used to be felt that once you damage the brain and that and certain functions were lost in a stroke, like maybe one side of the face was frozen, certain parts of the body couldn't be used anymore. All of that has changed, and it's revolutionary what's going on in the using mental exercises for stroke patients to regain the powers that they had. So mind can literally change the body and the brain, and that's a proven fact. And by knowing that, we also can understand what healers have been saying for millennia, that by changing one's mind and by focusing on who we want to be and how we want to be it, we can literally change our lives. We're not shackled to whatever we've become because of what happened to us. We don't have to be victims. We don't have to be prisoners of abuses or of the traumas that have beset all of us. So upon that realization, I think it's extremely important that people understand this, because it's so powerful, the empowerment that that people have.
Boy, I sure agree with you. And, of course, our listeners who have heard me talk about this a number of times and or read some things I may have written, they probably are following right along with what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to mention now, there's so many different things that you brought into play there. Of course, there's a thing called brain gen. It's been around for a long time. But there has been, in science, sometimes, occasionally, in medical science even, people who have suggested decades ago that you could change brain by thought, but some of it was also by interaction. So we have both cases coming into play here. But it certainly suggests that mind is separate from brain, and that's what, of course, you're saying. Another part of metaphysics is that, and spirituality, is that energy follows thought, at least to some level. You've got to have an awful lot of very powerful, very strong thought in the dimension that we presently live in to have much of an effect on energy. But there are other dimensions where that's much less true because of changes in the physics of those dimensions. At least that's my opinion. But one of the things that I want to kind of bring us to changes in science as it is evolving, outside of just the mention of brain, but I think which you already brought in, but there's a whole change in physics today. And a couple of things, and I'm going to bring it up. We didn't have a chance to talk about this before. But I know that you have definitely a foundation, so many different sciences, you probably have a pretty good understanding of this. And if you don't, we can chat about it, doesn't matter. But there's a question of a thing called either local or non-local conditions that affect the universe. Now, in our standard model in physics that people usually talk about, everything is in some way local, and that means that one thing touches another thing, affects another thing. It's always based upon an energy connection so that something doesn't take place without a connection, say, across a large, vast amount of time and space, although it could be a very short distance as well. And the interesting thing is, in recent times, because of another thing called entanglement, what has happened is there are some people now questioning the validity of these older concepts in physics. You go back about 100 years or so to Einstein, actually. And so the real question I have for you at this point is, do you think that some of the things, such as those two, the question of non-local and entanglement issues in physics, are going to lead physicists and other scientists to start looking at the question of mind being different from some physical reality, and that there is something other than just a connection in physical things that causes one thing to change another.
Yes, and that's what I cover in my book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality. I quote, and what I wanted to do in the book is not just hand wave and present what people might call anecdotal evidence. Anecdotal evidence is stories that may or may not be true, but not passing the tests of science of peer-reviewed publications. And so what I do in Healing the Rift is I quote Nobel Prize winners and leaders in their field who have published in the leading journals in the world. And the non-locality issue I explain in one of my chapters in Healing the Rift. And I also quote Brian Josephson, who is the 2001 Nobel Prize winner in physics. And he said that, this what Einstein called a spooky action at a distance, or non-locality, is an explanation for the so-called paranormal, on how people and how there might be a scientific explanation for telepathy or other ESP or what we might consider paranormal. But, you know, people who suffer near-death experiences, they have, many of them have unusual cognitive abilities, clairvoyance, the ability to do ESP and many other gifts, and it well may be quite explained by modern science using quantum physics and non-locality to explain this. And if this is true, and if, as I contend, the 21st century is the century of the mind, and we really are beginning to put resources there to understand the mind, then what is now paranormal may someday be normal.
And it's so interesting because from non-locality you end up with what has recently been described as entanglement. And in the more that entanglement is investigated, the more it turns out that all of the prior theories to try to discard any paranormal or, we'll say, extra-dimensional effects are going the opposite way. In other words, it's proven that there has to be extra-dimensional issues, that there has to be mind-controlling energy. There has to be other things that exist outside of a pure energy model, which, by the way, is, and of course I think you agree with this, it makes our universe almost meaningless. If you were to follow it to the extreme, a pure energy universe is a pretty much meaningless universe. I don't think most people would really want to live in one if one existed that was like that. Whereas this other model is so rich because even atoms and subatomic particles in atoms affect other subatomic particles and other atoms. So, and even at a great distance, there's no time and distance are irrelevant in this circumstance. That's one of the things that they're finding in some parts of quantum physics. And so, interestingly, here we have a model that is much closer to metaphysics than it is to standard or traditional physics, even from physics of just 10 or 15 years ago. So there's a lot of things that are making great strides. Although still, it isn't, I don't think it's having a significant effect on most of science. It's having an effect on everybody else that's reading about it. But I'm not sure that the majority of scientists at this point completely agree with that or even come close to agreeing with it. What do you think?
Well, I think scientists are actually coming around. And again, in my research for Healing the Rift, I tried to point out the leaders, not the laggards. And you're absolutely right. I think the vast majority of scientists are still stuck in thinking of our world as things. But I quote a 21st century astrophysicist who basically says in the number one journal in the world, Nature. His name's Richard Henry, and he's an astrophysicist at Johns Hopkins University. He's a chaired position. He wrote in the journal Nature in the year 2005. He basically says, you know, the trouble with 21st century scientists nowadays is they're still thinking of our world as things. And I'm doing a direct quote. He says, "But our world is not things; it's mind and spirit. That's our universe." So here we have one of the leading scientists in the world, in the leading journal in the world, saying in the year 2005 that our universe is mental and spiritual.
Isn't that encouraging? And
I think so.
For 20-some-odd years, I've been embroiled in this issue. I've written a bunch of articles on it, as you have been doing the same, by the way. We have, like, parallel lives. I wonder if we're really related in some way. Of course, we all are, but we may not realize it. And during that time, I've actually had people from various walks of science literally, on this show and other shows on other networks and stations, just about lambast me and sometimes ridicule the positions that we are talking about this evening. I mean, and some of these are very, very well-known scientists. So some of them have done movies, and I mean, it's incredible. And yet, this has occurred, and it wasn't that long ago. Sometimes it's less than 5 years ago. In other cases, it was 10 or 15 or 20. But still, the point is that the thing that's troubling about this is that we need to have a more open mind, of course, and we need to also start looking at truly what has been discovered in total rather than narrowly defining everything in terms of our own niche of fields, et cetera, that we may understand, because in looking over the fence, we may suddenly discover that there's a lot of contradictions and there's a lot of new ideas that could really serve to solve what seem to be insolvable problems.
You know, a lot of people have asked me about the cover of my book, Healing the Rift, and in the cover is an elephant floating in the sky in front of a cloud. And people say, well, what the heck does that mean? And it goes back to a 100-year-old Hindu story of seven blind men sitting around an elephant, feeling different parts, the tusk, the ear, the trunk, the tail, etc., and arguing what is out there and what they're feeling. And in I think there is a lesson that you create rifts, you create controversy, you create discord by focusing on differences. And my strategy in writing Healing the Rift is to concentrate on the commonality. One can never solve rifts by continuing to focus and to discuss the differences. Rifts can only be healed when one focuses on commonality. And lo and behold, when I did my research over a 5-year period on all the spiritual teachings I can get a hold of, all of the basic teachings of religions, they're saying the same thing. And lo and behold, in the 21st century, science has come around to what the spiritual and religious teachings have been saying for thousands of years. You know, it was only 10 years ago that scientists discovered that 96% of our universe is missing. And it isn't that they misplaced it. They just can't find the dark, mysterious dark energy and dark matter that they need to make their theories work with observations. But that isn't enough. there's still something missing. So they have to include the concept of an infinite number of parallel universes right alongside our own. But that's not enough. A string theory proposes that there are 7 hidden dimensions. And there is evidence of hidden dimensions from the Fermi lab of about a year ago that has actual evidence. And so the Fermi lab is undergoing a $15 million modification to do further experiments on that. But in addition to that, 1 cubic inch of space may have more energy than all of the energy we know about in our universe. So any one of these things might be considered, if published 20 years ago, as really bad science fiction. But what that tells us is this business about our world being composed of things is just so 18th century, so 19th century. It's just obsolete thinking. It's pointing us in the wrong direction in our thinking. And by realizing, as spiritual teachings, including the Bible and all spiritual teachings say, you know what? The most important parts of our world are hidden. And humans may or may not ever be able to comprehend it. Well, lo and behold, 10 years ago, it was discovered that, you know, 90% of this universe is missing, and there may be an infinite number of parallel universes alongside ours, as well as hidden dimensions. Well, they're finally catching up with spiritual teachings.
Yes, aren't they? And it's amazing. And these arguments that we're having still, although, like you said, things are starting to come together, it's inclusiveness that's going to solve everything, which really is just a form of raising consciousness. So that's going to hopefully be the answer for us. Now, we're going to be going to a break in a few seconds here. I wanted to make mention about something that's a little off the subject, but maybe not too far. And that is, and when we come back, we will be talking with Dr. Kimmel for the rest of the show. So please stay tuned, as they say. I want to mention that in about a week, some of you know about a product that I was involved in called Freedom While Aging. Now, we ran out of it. We sold out of it. And it hasn't been available for a while because it's so complex that the methods of making it makes it quite difficult. And really, as you know, there's so many other projects that I've been involved with and others. We just haven't had the wherewithal to be able to make more of it. But in about a week, there's going to be a new product that I've been involved in. It involves 2 new technologies. And these technologies are pretty impressive. What they do is they change the way that a specific new kind of what's called dietary supplement called resveratrol works. And one of the techniques with a patented method is called ideal cell sorption. And then the other is, I know they're kind of tongue twisters a little bit. And the other one is called Anti-Ox 20. You might say, what the heck is that? Well, the combination of these technologies allows this particular supplement to significantly affect the way this new ingredient that many people have recently heard about called resveratrol is absorbed at a cellular, molecular, and even most importantly, a genetic level. Affects it, something called a telomere. I know those are fancy words. But what it does is it can reverse, this is my opinion now, it can reverse aging. I have been one of the subjects. I've been trying this for, I think I'm in my 5th month now with this new technology and the product, et cetera. I am incredibly impressed with it. And it will be available for sale for the first time about a week from today. Look for it on Amazon.com. If you want to get some directly from the manufacturer, you can call 800-777-7850. And talk to somebody about it. But the most important thing, I wanted to let you know that it's coming out in a week. So it'll be available. I've never talked about it before. It's sort of like a pre-commercial to it. And we're going to go to commercial right now. We'll be back in about 3.5 minutes or so and continue our discussion with Dr. Kim.
Hun, what book are you reading? It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we have on our show Dr. Leo Kim, who has an amazing amount of information. He's written a book called Healing the Rift. I hope you will pick it up. He has been sponsoring this show, by the way, for the last couple of months. Thank you, Dr. Kim. I really appreciate that, and so do our listeners. Besides doing that, he is trying to really let the world know that there isn't an actual rift between science and spirituality. It's just in our own thought process and the way that we have for hundreds of years, relegated science to very much the material world and the, we'll say, the form side of existence. And it has pretty much ignored, unfortunately, the spiritual side, although the two are not separate. They're actually part of one. As you raise your consciousness, become inclusive of the universe, it will come to you that that's really the truth, we think. And I'm going to ask Dr. Kim a question. If you want to call in, you can, by the way. And the numbers are on the website. And I was, when we were talking earlier, one of the areas that you brought up is the question of dimensionality, dimensions of time and space. And a long time ago, I suggested there were seven dimensions of time and space, and luckily that's a number that you think might be appropriate based upon your conversations with others. And I'm just wondering what you think of as the existence of these dimensions of time and space. Are they like an M-string theorist would say, virtually impossible to live in, which is their opinion? Most of them that I've talked to, anyway. And or are they fully livable? And do we, in fact, exist in part there and maybe when we leave this realm, go on to live in some or all of these other dimensions of time and space? What is your thought about that?
Well, string theorists believe there are a total of 11 dimensions, seven in additional ones to the four we are familiar with.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
And that the and that some string theorists believe that they are in our world, but they are wrapped up in the very small.
Something you wouldn't be exactly comfortable to be in.
Well, it's just a different way of measuring the very small. But all of these are suppositions by scientists, and a string theory is extremely controversial. It is not universally accepted by all physicists, and some physicists really feel that string theory is mathematical wizardry, and it isn't really a theory. So I think, and then there are many, many people who say, you know, you really don't need these added dimensions if you accept the concept of these infinite number of other universes. Well, the string theorists will take issue with that. So there is fragmented, and it's just like the elephant example on the front of my book. They are arguing about what they all believe they're feeling in terms of their elephant, using different metaphors and different languages. And the big questions are based on supposition. Even the Big Bang theory recently means in the last 3 or 4 years, tremendous amounts of criticism and tremendous amounts of there have been many alternative theories where you don't need the Big Bang or you don't need certain aspects of the Big Bang. So
yeah,
it's more
or less a placeholder, and then you run into problems of superinflation as well. So it's all kinds of issues do arise. But go on.
Yeah, and even those scores of scientists who are looking for the explanation on how life was created without a creator, and they are doing their research based on faith, and the faith that they're basing their research on is that there indeed was not a creator. There is absolutely no evidence, zero evidence, that their supposition is correct. And I quote the leading researchers in this field in my book that, with a reference to them that basically says the same thing. It takes faith to do this. It takes faith to believe in string theory. It takes faith to believe in the Big Bang. It takes faith to believe that life originated on Earth and it wasn't seeded in some fashion. So all of these things are faith-based when it comes to the big questions. However, science and the scientific method works extremely well for making incremental progress. And that's why in the 20th century, we've had such phenomenal progress in science and in technology, giving us the gifts of that we are enjoying in our lifestyle today.
Okay, and so to the question of do you think that there are other dimensional elements to our universe? In other words, most scientists say the universe is the dimensional aspect of what we would call three dimensions plus time of the physical part of our universe. But in reality, I propose, and so do countless other people, that there are other dimensions of time and space, which is part of our universe, but it's in a way parts that we, by our own illusion, do not recognize and do not maybe sometimes with most people fully sense. So it's difficult for us to be able to recognize that these dimensional parts of our universe exist, and that maybe we go on to exist within these parts after what we call physical life. What do you think about that?
Well, I believe that we will learn a lot more about the power of the human mind before we resolve whether or not there is dark energy or dark matter. And, you know, scientists have been looking for dark energy and dark matter for a decade now, with the finest scientists in the field and the finest instruments, and they've been unable to make any progress. This whole question of parallel universes alongside our own, and it's not one or two, it's an infinite number of parallel universes where anything that can happen is happening in one of those universes. And that you take any instant of time, and it's going on at some one of these universes. That's the belief. And there's a guy named Tegmark at MIT who's a very famous professor who really, really subscribes and pushes this theory. The string theorists are focusing on using their mathematical equations and their assertions that there are 11 dimensions to explain our world. Now, do we need all of those? No. There are many people who contend that there is no dark energy or dark matter, and that the explanation of why things are happening in our universe that some scientists believe they need dark energy and dark matter, there are alternative explanations. So all of these are big, big question marks. And I suspect that these theories will be modified, replaced over the course of the coming decades. But it's entirely possible that it's like peeling the onion, and that the more we discover, the more mysterious our world is, and that's where we are right now. And it's beautiful because it really tells us that our world is mental and spiritual. And the bottom line of healing the rift is that I point out how all of these 21st century findings really, really support what spiritual people have been saying. And it also supports how powerful we are in the use of our mind to basically change our brains, our bodies, and our lives. And that's really the point that I want to make, and that really for the many people sort of put science on a pedestal, thinking that, you know, if scientists don't believe it, then it can't be real. And for so long, the scientists don't believe in spirituality or God or soul. And scientists certainly believe everything is physical or things. So it's almost like people have been living a split personality or two lives. One is the everyday material world where there are things, and then when they're faced with their own mortality or the death or illness of a loved one, do they become spiritual? Well, that doesn't have to be that anymore. It doesn't have to be that way.
Let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned earlier about near-death experiences.
Yes.
Do you think that consciousness survives physical death?
Absolutely. And let me give you the example of a clinical trial that was a 12-year clinical trial published in the year 2001 in the British medical journal Lancet by Pim van Lommel. And he looked at hundreds of patients suffering cardiac arrest, or what is known as a heart attack. And during a heart attack, you have no breathing, you have no heartbeat. And after 8 seconds of no heartbeat, there's no more blood supply to the brain, and therefore there's no brain function. And yet hundreds of these patients in the study could recall what was going on when they were dead, when there was no brain function. And he wrote in that article, it goes beyond scientific explanation. And again, that's based on things. That's based on the brain has to be necessary for that consciousness to be there. But that consciousness was still there when the brain was non-operable. And that spawned, actually, my book came out in November, and coincidentally, in November, a clinical trial involving 25 hospitals in Western Europe, Canada, and the United States started really examining this issue, and it will eventually involve 1,500 patients of cardiac arrest who were revived, and trying to understand this whole issue of how can there be consciousness when there's no brain function.
Isn't that fascinating? And I really, I didn't know about that particular study, although 30 years ago I was involved in studies from an institute that I was director of, a mental health institute that also did experiments under grant in consciousness, which is called the field of noetics. It's sort of a connected field, for those of you who don't know this, I'm sure you do, Dr. Kim, connected field to psychology, but it studies consciousness. And one of the experiments was that we created a really well-built sensory isolation tank and room that blocked out all sensation, and people would go into this environment and have what we would call today out-of-body experiences. Then they thought it was hallucinations, but later on it was discovered that the people weren't having hallucinations. They were actually sometimes having out-of-body experiences in this world, the electromagnetic, if you want to call it, part of this world, where they just they couldn't be seen, but they could see and hear things going on in other parts of the world. And then, in addition, quite a few people, including myself eventually, had out-of-body experiences that went to other dimensions of time and space where people would meet others who used to be physically alive in this realm and who then existed in these other dimensional realms. And the experiences that they had were nexus experiences. In other words, several people would meet the same being or person in other dimensions of time and space, and those people were in this isolation tank at different times and didn't know each other. They had no connection with each other, yet they reported having common experiences. That's pretty amazing stuff. And it's what convinced me, it's actually what changed my whole perspective from being, quote-unquote, a pretty hardcore, something called logical positivism back in those days, where if I didn't feel it, touch it, or whatever, I didn't have much belief in it, to pretty much who I am today, gradually over time, to someone who's much more spiritual, metaphysical than that condition, of course. So here's a connection today, something that's going on today that actually started in the 70s, but it's taken that long to kind of get the more conventional mainstream elements to start looking at this. And I'm so happy to hear, it's joyful for me, that they're starting to do this sort of thing and maybe come up with some results that will relieve, at least if nothing else, the fears that people might have of facing what is real death, which is the death of consciousness, not the death of the physical body. And I've been trying to tell people for a long time, consciousness doesn't die, only things, the body, and energy issues with that may go away. But there are other ways to exist in just the kind of body we presently exist in. What do you think about what I just said?
Well, you covered a lot of issues.
I sure did. I'm sorry.
There was a professor at UCLA by the name of Valerie Hunt, and I quote her extensively in my book, Healing the Rift. And she did studies, and she changed the electromagnetic environment around people. And some electromagnetic environments actually changed their level of consciousness where they could think extremely clear. Other environments would cause them to suddenly weep and just break down and cry. This is a very powerful study that Dr. Hunt did over many years, and that shows we are both emitters and receivers of energy. Now, no scientist No credible scientist would argue with the fact that we all radiate electromagnetic radiation as well. Our brains, our hearts, every cell of our body. And it radiates at the speed of light. So somebody who died 10,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago, their energies, every thought, every action, everything they did is chronicled and still radiating through the universe. And every one of us, long after our physical bodies are gone, that information is radiating through the universe and will be forever.
Fascinating, fascinating. And we're just about out of time. I wanted to mention that one of the things that I discovered, I did a lot of, we'll call it ad hoc experiments when I was in these altered states. One of the things that I discovered is that time is dilated and different in some other dimensions than here. And what that means is a person in years here could live a year here, but actually live 20 years or more in this other realm. So when people go on to live, they live extended lives in comparison to us here. And if they do have some awareness of it, of us here, which they can have, we seldom have awareness of them, but they actually see us as moving like in slow motion because, in effect, their life is expanded, so they're living in an expanded time. What do you think about that possibility?
Well, scientists, and again, I discussed this in the book, scientists cannot speak of time without speaking of space. Scientists, in terms of just one dimension, time, cannot accept it. To scientists and physicists, time is laid out like a timescape, where the past, the present, and the future is all laid out in our universe. And for a long time, this confounded scientists, because if that's true, then the scientists are forced to believe that there's no free will. Because if everything is set, then there's nothing to be decided. All of our future is decided. But lo and behold, this whole concept of an infinite number of parallel universes changes all of that, because the premise is that in these infinite number of parallel universes, every possible event occurs, and that we have free will, and what we do is when, with our minds, we access the universe in which we need to take whatever action or thought to move forward. And therefore, there is free will. Therefore, one can change their lives and their bodies. But you need to be able to move through these infinite number of parallel universes to do this.
Well,
that solves that problem.
Yeah. I have another way to solve it, but unfortunately we're out of time, and we've got to talk more, you and I, and maybe another program on the air as well, about that very issue of time, and we will have that discussion at another time because we're out of time right now. I want to thank you for being on the show this evening. Fascinating conversation. We've been talking with Dr. Leo Kim, and he has written the book Healing the Rift. Of course, we're doing his commercial, so you've been doing it. I've been telling everyone to listen in on your commercial and to consider getting that that book. And I think we're going to do it right now, actually, as we close the show. So I want to thank you again for being on. Really appreciate everything you said. And just let the people know how they can get a hold of you and or find out more about your book. Go ahead and tell them where they can.
Yes, I answer all my emails. My email is leo@healingtheriftbook.com, and rift is spelled R-I-F-T. My website is www.healingtheriftbook.com.
Okay. Well, thank you again. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.